Christian Parenting.
This is Be Love, Do Good Podcast, and I'm your host, Christy Hayes, mama to two, founder of Be Strong Story, and author of the children's book, The Lunchbox Note, a true story of how a lunchbox note that said, be strong, protect the weak, love everyone, changed our life, and created a mission for our family. Join us each week for conversations that inspire our families to live out true compassion, kindness, and what it looks like to be love and do good in our communities. It may take us out of our comfort zones, you guys, but I promise it will put us on a path to see others, love others, and quite possibly change the world. Everyone, welcome to Be Love, Do Good Podcast. I'm your host, Christy Hayes, and I have a favor to ask of you. If you love listening to our podcast, I would be so grateful if you would follow our show. You can subscribe to it by going to Apple Podcasts or wherever you like to listen. There's usually a button at the top, three little buttons, or a follow button. You can just push that. So make sure that you do that and you can never miss an episode. Also, if you would leave us a review, that is so helpful for us in the podcast world and gets our show out to others. So thank you so much for doing that. I'm so pumped and grateful for my guest today, Jamie Nato. Oh my gosh, you guys, she is so funny. If you are not familiar with her, I feel like she's a comedian. Just, you need to go to her Instagram, which is Jamie Nato, and just, you'll do a deep dive of all the amazing things that she talks about. She is incredible, but she just wrote a new book, and I'm so excited to share that with you today, and it is a book that I think all of us need to read, all of us who maybe have struggled with purpose or what we are to be and do, and her new book is called This Must Be the Place: Following the Breadcrumbs of Your Past to Discover Your Purpose Today. Jamie is an entrepreneur. She is a mom. She's a wife. She is a businesswoman. She is an author. She does a lot of things, and we joke a little bit about all the things that she does, and she is just so fun. We laugh a lot this episode, but at the same time, we're serious about who God has created us to be. So if you ever feel stuck in your purpose, or you feel like, how do I truly become who God has created me to be? This is the one for you. And this is the book that you're going to love as well. So I encourage you today, as you listen, to be thinking of the ways that this might help you live out your purpose. Hey everyone, thanks so much for joining us for Be Love, Do Good Podcast. I have the very funny, I'm already giggling because I feel like we'll giggle the whole time, Jamie Nato on. She has been on before. If you do not know her, I need you to go to her Instagram right now because your ADHD series is making me die. It also is making me insecure because I'm like, I don't feel like I have ADHD. But then when I watch your pieces, I'm like, dang, that could be me. So tell us a little bit about you. And then just for people who might not have followed your Instagram, can you do a little of your ADHD situation?
I do a little bit of everything, but isn't that what ADHD people do? Like, we kind of dabble in anything that gives us a dopamine hit for that day. Yes. So I used to think I was just Enneagram 7. And so that was easy for me to be like, oh, we are just kind of flighty and fun and never boring. And then I was watching a series of video reels, and this kid who's in college is, it's as if someone has a video camera in my life. And so this college kid is teaching me about ADHD. And I finally, because I was like, what a coincidence. Then there were too many coincidences. And my best friend, who's a therapist, I was like, Lindsay, do I need to go get diagnosed? And she said, you know, you've made it this long. If you're functioning and you've found ways and hacks to like get along, you know, keep living your life. And I think it's my superpower. Like, I'm a serial entrepreneur for a reason. I need to be entertained constantly.
I was giggling because the piles one, I did not show that to my husband because that is me. Or the hooks, like when you were saying, like, tell a little bit about your hook situation.
Well, I don't know how else to fix piles because my brain is not going to fix it. So what I've done is put hooks literally everywhere in my house. And it's my new invention. It's called Hooks TM. follow, like, and subscribe for more stupid videos. I just thought, why do I have hooks everywhere? And then when I start putting out this content, people say, oh my gosh, me too. My house is full of hooks. It's piled for your wall. TM. So.
Well, and I feel like the hooks make us feel more organized. It makes me feel more clean. So I came from, so my husband is military school. So when we first got married, he was refolding all of the clothes while we're in the same room. Like, literally, I remember it was like our first week, and I'm trying to be like Susie housemaker, which I'm not at all. And I remember like folding the clothes. I'm like, oh, I'm gonna be this, you know, sweet wife. And I look underneath the bed and I was like, what is he doing down there? Like, what is he doing? He was refolding all my clothes underneath the bed, like refolding. Oh. I was like, bruh, I was like, are you refolding the clothes that I just folded?
They weren't crisp enough.
They were not crisp. That you could not put a quarter and have it bounce off. And so from this day on, I was like, you can either take wrinkly, slouchy clothes, yep, or you can do it yourself. And so the funny thing is, he actually pretty much does the laundry now. But
seriously, my husband reloads the dishwasher when I do that. And I think it looks creative. I think I really did some art.
Are you a stuffer? We're called the Stevenson Stuffers. That's my maiden name, Stuffers.
I don't know. I do just, it's creative is what I'll say. And, but he is very efficient. And so that's not a good use of the space. Mm-hmm. So he will redo it so that everything fits perfectly. And I'm like, the plates didn't have to be with each other, no. NATO. Like, they're not best friends. But I don't care now if that's how he wants to spend his time.
That's great. That's great.
I love that journey for you.
That's not for me. It's for you. Alrighty. So let's talk about your new book that is coming out very soon. And tell me a little bit about the journey of the book. I know you have said in the past that you wrote something, kind of switched it around. You've sent it to some publishers. People asked you to write a book for years. You're like, no, thank you, sir. So tell me how this journey came about.
I made it because I needed to lead my team. I had hundreds of business builders for my team, and I needed to help them find a way to be themselves, but also sell and sell with integrity. And I thought the only way you can sell with integrity is you have to be fully yourself. And what was happening, what I noticed was happening, is that women, and we do this in every area of life, look around and they see what all the other women are doing. And then, oh, that lady was successful. I'll just do what she's doing. Even though it has nothing to do with your personality, you are not, like, when people try to be funny because they see a funny video and then they try it and it's a bomb and you're like, please don't try humor right now. Like, not that you can't try it, but some people were trying so hard to be other things. It's like when I try to do math and I get fired from the budget every time. It just doesn't work in my brain. And so I was trying to teach them, even if this business doesn't work for them, even if this isn't the right fit, what can I give them that can never be taken away from them? So, yeah, I want to teach them to have a successful business, but I really want them to know themselves most of all, because mm-hmm. women have been traditionally under-equipped, undervalued, diminished in a lot of ways. And so I thought, I'm going to make a book I wish I would have had 10 years ago. And I just kind of found my way along this path. I call it using your breadcrumbs, where you kind of look back to look forward. And I think they're arrows. I think we're going to get lost along the way, and you maybe need a Sherpa, especially after COVID. Like, everyone's kind of waking up and looking around saying, is this how I want to live? Is mm-hmm. this who I want to be with? Is this who I want to be? Am I using my talents and gifts to steward them properly? I think we're just kind of waking up finally. And I'm happy that I had worked on this during COVID, that we have a resource to say, women, your stories are so valuable and you need to take up space. And when you do that, you kind of dig around and find those treasures. We start really living on purpose, very intentional.
When did you feel like you figured it out? I mean, I know you haven't figured it out. No one will ever figure it out. We'll journey it. But when do you feel like you had that moment of like, okay, I can be authentically me, who God created me to be. No longer am I looking to the right or to the left. Like I am feeling, or I'm starting to feel comfortable in who I am and able to share that with the world. Was there a moment for you? When did that happen?
Yeah. Well, it's because I was so uncomfortable with myself and some of my gifts that I was going to the Lord and saying, I think selling things is so bad. I'm sure it's a sin that I love this. I love being in the marketplace. Oh God, take this burden away from me for providing for my family, which men don't even, like, it doesn't cross their mind to wonder why they love selling, or they just get pats on the back. And then if you're a woman selling, it's like, oh, sleazeball, you just want my money. And so I was struggling, like, why is this burden upon me? And so God was like, LOL, sister, let's look at what you were doing when you were 7 or 8. And I remembered what I was doing. Kids were playing doctor. Kids are digging around in the dirt. Kids are playing school. They're playing house. And those things were all played by me too. But the main thing that I played was selling rocks to my neighbors. I pulled a wagon of rocks.
Were they pretty? Were they pretty rocks? Did you
paint
them?
They were pretty rocks.
You painted them?
No.
No. No. Okay.
These were just curated, highly curated from Monroe Street. And I sold them to my old neighbors and they all bought them. And some of them probably had Alzheimer's and that's fine, but maybe sleazy. Okay. But I didn't know. And so I would knock on the doors and sell them rocks and they would buy them because I wanted to buy New Kids on the Block trading cards at the corner store.
100%.
It's huge. And I was poor. We grew up on welfare. So you don't ask your parents for money. Mm-mm. It's not even, I cannot remember asking my parents for money when I was little. It just wasn't there. And so you had to make something out of nothing. And so my mom would have leftover zinnia seeds and I would help her pick them for like the next year's harvest, keep them in a big paper sack. And she would have extras. She said, if I could pick the, I could pick the rest of them because she had what she needed. And then I would package them up, like not even good packaging, you know, Ziploc bag and off-brand Ziploc bag. They were the sandwich bags that fold.
Oh, not even with the elastic part. No,
you can't afford those. No. And then I would sell those to my neighbors. So when I realized that, I've been doing this since I was so young. And when you're doing that at from 8 to 10 or just kind of that age around that time, it's a really pure you, barring like trauma and all that. But what you were doing when the weight of the world wasn't on your shoulders says a lot, especially in that age group. And even now I look at my kids and I look at the neighbor kids and I see what they're doing and I make a little mental tab. And so that when they become adults and they lose their way, which they will, we all try to find our own way. I can say, especially to my kids, you know what you were doing when you were 8. And I just think it's one breadcrumb that gives you a huge permission slip. And once I realized that, I was on fire. Like I stopped apologizing for making money. I stopped being weird about money. I wanted other women to make money because women traditionally are more philanthropic, absolutely more philanthropic. And they have a pulse on the community. They know where money needs to go. They're the ones who are, if the budget and we're saying, where are we giving? Women are the ones directing those funds. And it's not because our husbands aren't generous. They are. Mm-hmm. But women just are traditionally much more generous. So yeah, I want women to make money because we see other little girls. When one woman rises, we all rise. So I get passionate about it. And so once I thought about that, oh, what was I doing when I was 8? Man, I stopped apologizing for some of my gifts.
When you were kind of living in who you were, did you face people who were like, huh, I wouldn't do it that way, or you shouldn't live out that gift? Or even maybe when you're mommy and you have so much going on and some of those dreams that you have feel insignificant or they don't feel like you have time to do that. What do you say for people in that season where they may feel like, hey, God gifted me to do this, but either it's not the right season or I feel like others are not into that?
Yeah, those are questions you have to ask yourself. Am I not doing something because I'm afraid of other people's approval and opinions? I want their approval. Or Is it just not my season right now? Now, a lot of times we will self-sabotage and say, it's just not my season right now, when we haven't really given it a go, because it's easier to self-sabotage yourself and already shut yourself down than to possibly fail.
As Christian parents, there are so many things that we want to teach our kids about God and His love for us. But leading your family in faith can be so overwhelming. What are the most important things to teach, and where do we even begin? I'm really excited to tell you about a great resource from Christian Parenting that will make teaching faith at home simple, engaging, and fun. Love God and Love Others is a 4-week family challenge to help you teach your kids the greatest commandment of all time, to love God and to love others. Each week, you're going to focus on loving God with different aspects of who you are, and this bundle includes a few pages on a portion of the Great Commandment to equip you for the week ahead, scriptures and points of truth for your family to reflect on together, and fun challenges to try with your family. This resource is an amazing opportunity for you and your family to grow closer to each other and to God as you learn about His steadfast love for you and as you learn to love Him with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. For more information and to get your copy, head over to cpgive.org. That's cpgive.org. Let's learn to love God and love others well this summer.
Tell me about that. What does self-sabotage look like to you? Well, what did it look like to you?
Yeah, I said I was going to write a book for like a decade and everyone had to hear about it. And what I would do is say, it's just not my season. And sometimes that was true, but a lot of times it was just because I didn't want to sit my butt down in a chair for 2 hours every day and write it. A lot of it was I got distracted by other things. You know, I love business, so I would be doing other business things. And this book is in the back of my head saying, like, hey, when are you going to give me a little bit of attention? So I self-sabotage myself, because you know what? That's not a fun book. It is a fun book, but it's hard to put yourself out there and say, do you guys like this? Mm-hmm. Do you love my stories? Or do you think I'm stupid? And I think sometimes we're more afraid of our success than we are of failure. Even, you know, if this sees the world, I'm going to get, you know, strung up by some members of like different Christian communities, or, you know, it's like, everyone's not going to agree with the way that I did this. Everyone's not going to agree that I got a nanny because my business was taking off and I needed help. And my husband had his career too. And why don't you just stay at home? You know, was a question I got. And I just thought, well, I have this burning desire and gift and ambition inside of me, and I want to use it for God's glory. Please just let me run my race. Mm. So it's not for everyone. It's not for everyone. I didn't always have a nanny. It was just getting to a head. Like, I had to make a decision, and that is what I chose, and I don't regret it.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's for everyone, like whatever their purpose and passion is. If it's to stay at home and people are like, why do you do that? Why don't you work? Or why aren't you like this? I think when you come into different spaces, for me, I'm similar to you, entrepreneur, have a pretty intense job right now, and I love it. And we are making it work. And I also feel like I'm a really good mom. Like, I don't feel – I mean, I think at sometimes I feel that mom guilt when – I think I told you we were out really late last night on an emergency. But for the most part, like, my kids get it. They come alongside it. And so I think just for women who are listening, wherever you are and whatever you feel like that purpose is, whether it's having 10 kids and being with your family or being the CEO of a company, that – I think I want to come into spaces where all of it feels good and you get high fives for all of it.
Yeah. Well, I think the message of the gospel is what we should have always been unifying around, not unifying around a certain political party. We're not supposed to be unifying around a certain way of doing things. Like, I'm a stay-at-home mom. Well, I'm a working mom. Like, those are not supposed to be what we're supposed to be unifying around. We are supposed to unify ourselves around God. And we find our hope and our identity there. Now, in that umbrella, you know, Romans 14 and 15 talks about people who are believers and not believers, and some say I can eat this and some say I can't eat that. And we're all still under this umbrella of believers. And he says, let them have their convictions. So he already tells us we're going to have different convictions under this umbrella, like respect that. But we unify around something greater than ourselves. We unify something greater than these identities that we find a lot of hope in. So I try to keep that in mind, because I don't want anyone to feel like because they aren't working out in the marketplace that they aren't doing what God created them to do. Just like you said, follow your convictions and your purpose inside of those spaces you're at right now.
And our identity, what I've noticed, even when I follow those things, my identity then can get wrapped up in the success of whatever it is, whether it be, you know, a great mom or a great CEO or, you know, those things. And I think we always have to constantly, for me, have to be reminded my identity is not how great I led this meeting or did this. My identity is in Christ always. So if all of those things were to be gone, I would still be satisfied in Christ. It's a gift to me that I'm able to use the gifts and talents in the things that I love, you know, I love to do. But I think that's where people maybe get tripped up if they feel like they can't do that, or maybe their past, because they have a certain past that they can't do that. I want you to talk a little bit about that. I love the title of your book, This Must Be the Place. I love that, because I think wherever you are, it just reminds you, like, this is your place for this season, for this time. And then I love where it says, following the breadcrumbs of your past to discover your purpose today. And I think breadcrumbs is such a sweet phrase. But I'd love to talk to you about just kind of those breadcrumbs of past. One of your quotes says, one thing you talk about is every experience, good or bad, molds and contours who a woman is today and what she is meant to be. Nothing is by accident. And so can you talk a little bit about some of the painful times that you had just in your marriage that you've talked about that have led you, those breadcrumbs have led you to who you are today? I think it just talks to those who maybe be in a painful place and feel like they will never get out of it, or maybe they feel like their past is hindering them from this beautiful future.
Well, first of all, I would just say I have been there where the walls are caving in and you think it's going to be this dark forever. Mm-hmm. And for that, I would say the rain eventually dries up and it's not always going to be like this. And I don't know if I believe that, but I needed someone to tell me that when I was going through just the devastating time of our marriage. My husband had cheated on me, but I was this like A-plus Christian who was doing all the Christian-y things. And I followed the formulas that they told me to do. And I was staying at home and I was praying for my husband and we were in Bible studies and I saved myself for marriage. I mean, it's like all those things I was told that if you do this, you're going to have a good marriage. And then I had a very rotten marriage. So now I'm going to get a divorce. I have a toddler and a baby. I am just exhausted physically already. And now my husband loves someone else. Mm-hmm. And so it brought me to the darkest place I've ever been. But I will say, I had a lot of identity wrapped up in being a good wife and a good mom and an A-plus Christian. And I was going to be the one that was going to help everybody else. I didn't really need God's help. God needed my help. And then you're just desperate for like people to help you. And so my friends came along and they were cleaning my house or making dinner or just being with me. And, you know, that identity got stripped away. And I did think it was the end. I really thought this is the biggest stop sign I've ever had in my life. And by God's mercy, truly, we reconciled and it took everything in us and a miracle from God to make that work. But when I chose to reframe that, I started to say things like, I'm really thankful for infidelity. Which is a shocking phrase to say, because I would not wish that on anybody. And it was so offensive. You know, at this time I'm blogging and to my 400 followers, but I was saying like, I'm really thankful because of what I experienced, God's presence. God was so near to me. I say I was spooning with Jesus, which I think is pretty like offensive probably, but I swear it was me and Jesus spooning for a little bit, and especially when you're all alone at night and you have these babies you're trying to take care of, and you're just lonely. And to have God show it for me, I mean, I would not have experienced that without that total loss and suffering. And so I think when you reframe that, start reframing that and being brave enough to go back and dig up that thing that you've put away, dig it up and say, there might be some treasure in here that I didn't see the first time around. And I am so thankful I get to be the Sherpa. I'm the one with the flashlight saying, like, what about this pile? I see this pile. What are we going to do there? And you get to choose. Do I want to see this as a gift, or do I want to bury this? And that's, you know, humans do a lot of that, and that's okay. We're just messed up, right? But I challenge you to dig around and say, hey, maybe that stop sign is my catapult, because it was for me. You know, once I started, I radical acceptance, right? I didn't want this to happen. It happened to me. I don't even know how to move forward, but radical acceptance, it did happen. And so now what do we do? Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I'm not going to just bury this. We are going to talk about it, and someone's going to get helped, because I could not find people on the internet. Actually, I found one lady who was talking about it in Christian spaces. And I said, well, that's not an option to let other women just suffer in silence. No. So we started talking about it. And that is when our ministry kind of like exploded. It gave me a lot of opportunities to be, you know, in front of people, just telling them our story and what God did. And so, you know, I look back at that as what was going to be used for evil was used for my good. Mm-hmm. And we do not grieve as a people without hope. And God says, count it all joy, even in suffering. And so he is the great reframer. I think sometimes Christians, there's this movement of like, just let us be sad. Just let us not make sense of it. And that is okay. There is a time of that where you just are mad and you're sad and you get to do that. But there is a point where we are told that it will be used for good. And there is a point when we have to start believing that and moving forward.
How long did that take you to get to that space where you actually were like, okay, I can believe that, or I can start to live that?
I don't know when it happened, but if you see a lot of miracles over and over and over, it happens pretty quick, like, because you can't make it up. So our healing was, NATO's was repentant after, I think, 2 months of us not being to be separated. And then when he came back, which I wasn't sure he was going to come back, I wasn't talking to him, so I had no clue. Well, I turned him over to his sin. I said, go have her. Go have it. And I'm telling you, it's going to be the death of you. And because he was just so out of control that I really thought, you are going to die, sir. And I meant literally, I thought, you were such a tornado. No pun intended. I just said that, flew out of my mouth, tornado. But he was just this Tasmanian devil. And I said, you're going to just die in this, but repent, you know? But I was ready to, if I needed to get a divorce, I was okay with that. You can't make a man stay, and I'm not going to be begging and all that. I had a good support system and whatever. But he came back and was just visibly different. And his actions were completely different. And he was a changed person. And you can't deny repentance. And so it was this miraculous thing happening over and over again. So I started to believe pretty quickly that God was going to use this for good, because he does miracles, and he does them for us, but he does miracles so that people see them and say, what is their God like? Mm-hmm. It's just this magnet. So it was pretty quick, but I will say it's up and down, up and down, up and down. I mean, for a decade. There's occasionally times now when I get triggered and whatever, I get mad at him for something that he did 12 years ago, but it's almost like it didn't happen to us.
I love that. Just people hearing when, you know, whatever they're going through, that there is, you know, that stupid cliche, light at the end of the tunnel, and it won't be this dark forever. And I do love, as those of us who do know Christ, that we do get to live in hope. And some of those darkest of days, there might just be like a little bitty glimmer of hope, but that that light gets a little bit bigger and bigger as we kind of trust our situations to God. So I just never want anyone to feel like they're disqualified from the purpose that God has for them because of maybe a past decision that's happened to them or mm-hmm. a choice that they've made, a regretful decision, because God can redeem all of it. All of it.
Directional missteps are just as much of an arrow as a win. Mm-hmm. Like a directional misstep is a thing that tells you, like, that wasn't the way I should have gone. Like, how would you have known that wasn't the way you should have gone unless you did that thing and you experienced that thing? Actually, a directional misstep, it kind of sometimes informs your really unique empathy. Like, ooh, I went there before too. I understand that. Mm-hmm. It's just, we're, as people who know God, we are constantly reframing that stuff. So like that the world may say, you're too far gone, that was too bad, or now you're invaluable, and that's worthless. The people of God say, we don't do that. We have hope. And so we treat this directional misstep as something that God is going to use for good.
Mm-hmm. I love it. As we kind of wrap up, I'd love to ask you, what was one of your favorite things in the book? Like if you, I know you're probably like, I want everyone to read this chapter and this chapter and this chapter and this chapter, but like if you could cliff note it, and you want someone, the reader, to walk away with a feeling or an action item, what would that be? After people read your book, what do you want them to glean from it?
Well, I hope they get what I got out of looking back. It's just, you know, there's questions at the end of each chapter. And if you really, really answered them and you wrote them down, you would have a mini memoir. You would have a story that is written down that's all yours. Because I get tired of women being eulogized by other people, which is fine. However beautiful that is, it matters, but it's not their story. And we are so complicated and layered. And I want women to write their story down and to take up space with it. I want us to stop being small. And I want us to say, here it is, the good, the bad, the ugly, the beautiful, the weird. And I'm going to choose to say, none of this was an accident. And this is my story, and here it is. It doesn't always have a bow on it, guys. It's just sometimes that's the story. Mm-hmm. But when you watch a good movie, when you read a good book, it would be a terrible book if it was like, listen, one day I got up and I went from A to B to C, and I got that treasure. Like, you would be like, this movie sucks. But our lives are just up and down and dangerous, and you get lost and you find your way and something happens. It's like the hand of God. And you know, it's this great adventure that you're on. And so I hope that we can start looking at it with a bird's eye view and holding a flashlight on each other's breadcrumbs and bearing witness to each other's mm-hmm. story, saying that matters. And you using your voice and you writing it down encourages me. And so I just want more women. That's my secret hope that I don't get to talk about a lot, is I hope women write memoirs. I don't care if you're a bad writer. I hope you read this book and you really do answer the questions at the end, and then you have your little book too.
I love it. I think we get nervous. I think of some of my friends, we just did this Bible study where we kind of went through our whole lives and we talked about like the grammar school years, your junior high to high school to college. And it's interesting because some of us would say, oh, it was, you know, those years were nothing, like it was easy. And then when we start really digging in them, we're like, oh my gosh, like that actually really identified me in that season. And this yeah. is why I think this. And oh my gosh, this is why this disappointed me, you know, all those different things. And I think sometimes we're afraid to look back because maybe it was yeah. so painful or it was so hard that we just want to erase that part of us, or we just want to mm-hmm. brush over it and get to the new. But yeah. what I'm learning in also a hard journey and lots of fun counseling who don't let you brush over things, when I say, so how many weeks is this going to be? So like, when could you give me like a timeline of when we're going to be done with this? Because I have things to do. So when you're like that, like my personality, and you're ready to get to the good stuff, because sevens don't want to be in anything uncomfortable.
No.
we're ready for the comfort and the fun and the exciting. When you have to sit in some of that, it's hard. And so I do just encourage. I love that you've given people space to kind of sit in that, but also hope for the future. For sure.
I mean, you have to have hope for the future. It's a miserable way to live if we don't have hope for the future. And it's also very unattractive if you don't have a hope for something bigger than, didn't we learn that, bigger than our politics, bigger than our churches, bigger than our families, bigger than our hope has to be bigger. Or we live as a people who are wandering around with no hope.
I love it. Well, thank you for giving us hope today. And thank you for your book. I want everyone to make sure they get it. This Must Be the Place, Following the Breadcrumbs of Your Past to Discover Your Purpose Today. And you can get that anywhere. And make sure you follow Jamie in all the places. We will make sure and put on all the show notes. Thanks, Jamie, for being with us. And thanks for finally sitting your butt down and writing that book. You did it.
Throw me a parade.
Thanks, Jamie.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope this inspired you and motivated you to truly live out the purpose that God has given you. And I think it's so incredible when women especially live into who they are and they don't compare themselves anymore, but they live into who they are. And I thought Jamie did such a great job in this episode, but also in her book, of helping us see those sweet little breadcrumbs that sometimes don't feel so sweet all the time, of how that can help us find our way to who we are and who we need to be. And so I encourage you to get her book. It comes out the first week of June, but pre-orders are huge for authors. And so I encourage all my listeners to pre-order her book, This Must Be the Place. I will have all the information in the show notes, but basically you can get it anywhere that you love to get your books. Thanks again for being with us this week and being love and doing good in your community. Have a great week. We'll see you next time. Don't want